Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Bobby, I'm so blessed to be in it.
How proud are you of your son?
I'm very, very proud. And I tell people all the time that I'm proud of not just Bobby, I'm proud of all four of my boys. And it's the fact that he just kept working hard, knowing the situation he was in. This time last year, he was at home with me. Of course, doing all the things that we normally do. The world was shut down. We made a gym at home. We bought a treadmill. We know we did everything we could to stay in shape. And then all of a sudden, once the gym started opening, he started going to the gym and working out. But to be here now, it was a total 365-degree turn for us.
Lastly, as a mother, when you hear these chants for your son constantly, how does that make you feel?
Words can't describe it, because for once for me to be in the gym and for them to do it, man, it's unreal. It's unreal or whatever. And the thing about it is that they love him here. They really love him here. You don't never hear no boos or nothing. It's always Bobby, Bobby, Bobby. I'm just blessed and humbled to be here.
Big news! The Athletic NBA Show will now bring you even more content through the Athletic Audio Plus. Subscribe now for a free 30-day trial via Apple Podcasts to listen to bonus specials, exclusive interviews, Q&As, and more. And after your trial, it's only $1 a month for access to all Athletic Audio, plus bonus content across our entire network of shows. Check out the Athletic NBA Show's latest bonus episode now, only on Apple Podcasts.
You know, it's crazy. That's what everybody, like, when I came here, they're like, yo, you gotta, like, show, like, you gotta be the dog. And I'm like, man, we got dogs. Like, they just say, like, we, like, I got here, like, we already got dogs. They just don't know how to be dogs. And we gonna be dogs. And our dogs is crazy. We got dogs, you hear me? Milwaukee, we dogs!
Want an easy way to stay up to date with the latest news and trends in the NBA? Listen to the NBA Daily Ding podcast. Wake up and turn up the NBA Daily Ding to stay informed on all things NBA here at The Athletic and wherever you get your podcasts.
With the playoffs in full swing, you don't want to miss a single episode of the Basket Buds edition of the Athletic NBA Show podcast on the Athletic Podcast Network every single Monday with myself, Zach Harper, and our cast of characters, Trevon Edwards, Jay King, Dave DeFore, James Edward III, Law Murray. We're breaking down every single big playoff story, and we're doing it with a lot of fun and a lot of trash talk. Make sure you're checking it out. The Basket Buds edition of the Athletic NBA Show every single Monday morning, right in your podcast face.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Y'all want to hype up Coach Bud's kicks?
It's Budenholzer season.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's mostly, but we should have our medical director come and see you guys go.
Coach Bud, what was the experience like coaching these specific group of men?
Oh, it's incredible to coach these guys. Coming in every day, coming into the building with a group that works like they do, the group that embraces some of our mantras. We talk about getting better every day. We talk about playing together. When you do those things, you end up on a stage like this. They compete. They're NBA champions. I couldn't be more happy for our players, for our team, for our organization, for our city of Milwaukee, NBA champions. Yeah. It's big time.
This is Nerd or She Wrote with your host, Dave Dufour.
With Mo DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Partnow.
You see all these... What?
You can't make this up, man.
This organization, what we put together, you can't make this up. This ain't, nothing matter except what's going on right here, right now.
One more thing, Kitty Cat.
Milwaukee,
DJ Tucker, everybody.
We did it, man.
Man, if you remember the kids, anybody told us that 2021, 10 years later, we all three of us gonna be champs. I wanted to live in that.
You must have something I can't see.
I know my mom's extremely proud. I know my dad's extremely proud.
So I'm wondering what Disney movie, what Disney story really talk about and really sounds of lovers
in the air. This is incredible. I mean, look at this. Look at all these people. It's so special. You know, Zora, I just can't put it into words.
Your brother is right over there.
Not as attractive or charismatic as Emilio Estevez. But it's a lot like the Mighty Ducks, I think.
We built Jamestown. We were here from the beginning. All the benefits of American society has been denied to us.
Come on, throws it down!
You can't even measure. I mean, each time we're down 0-2, all we did was get closer. Some teams separate.
This organization took us in as family. And in 1 year, man, look what we could do. Maybe we could do it again, huh?
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show. It's Friday. It's Nerd or She Wrote. I botched that intro because, I don't know, Seth's still trying to clap.
It's Seth's fault.
It is Seth's fault. I am going to blame Seth. I'm Dave Dufour, Seth Partnow, Mo DeKeel. The gang is all here. The season is over. The Bucks are the champs. First of all, Seth, congratulations, kind of. I mean, you know, like, you were a part of the team. Listen, you were a part of the team fairly recently. Like, it has to feel pretty good to see at least see the people that you work with win the title, right? So happy for them and happy for you too, because you still played a part in it.
I mean, this, I agree with the well, you kind of switched it around. The second part, I'm happy with for the people who I worked with that are still there. But like, it's been a very weird feeling getting congratulated, because I didn't have anything to do with it. Like, okay,
I mean,
you know, maybe me saying repeatedly for 3 years that Drew Holiday was really good, maybe that like lingered somewhere.
Get a ring for that.
Yeah, no, but like, no, I am, you know. Shouts to Blaine Miller and Skylar Rimmer, two of the film guys who were my guys there, who I saw on TV getting champagne sprayed all over themselves. So yeah, like I'm happy for those guys. Happy for people in the city. It's been, you know, 50 years is a long time. As a Red Sox fan, I can relate to how the people here feel. It felt a lot like, you know, calling my dad for the people here, I imagine it felt a lot like when I called my dad after the 2004 World Series. So yeah, Great. Happy for
them. This is proof of how different Seth and I are. I'm vindictive as all hell and a little prick. I'm like, when I leave, you can't win a championship for a couple of years. It has to be a few years removed.
Last year, I got to admit, if last year I would have been mad. 2 years, it's fine.
No, I have like a 3 year span. Like I got to run here a little bit, little bit of different attitudes between the two of us.
So this was a super enjoyable series from a basketball perspective. I mean, the games were relatively close. I mean, even if the last four, maybe it didn't feel as close because just of how, I mean, Giannis was so dominant. I wouldn't say the Bucks were dominant, but, what'd you guys think about the series overall? Do you guys agree with me that it was generally felt close? Like it felt like there was a lot of tension.
Yeah. You play the game sort of as played, you know, obviously you can't do this, but you play as played 100 times. And there are times where the first five games, there are times when Phoenix wins four of those five. You know, they could easily have won. Game three was sort of the only laugher in the Bucks' favor. And while it got closer at the end, game two was pretty much all Phoenix. And other than that, any of the other games, to some extent, could have gone either way. Game six kind of felt a little inexorable towards the end. I thought it was super competitive, super enjoyable. I think that we really did see the value of experience, I think. The Bucks had a little bit more. We've been here. We know how to. And this is a refrain I went back to numerous times during the finals. The Bucks were better able to play basketball, not play the moment, towards the back half of the series. And that, you know, comes from trying and failing, I think, a couple times before, having figured out how to figure things out when options one, two, and three get taken away.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. This was a closer series than I think people realized, you know, and even the first two games, they pulled away in game two, but they were still single digit games in the fourth quarters in both of those games. And that was one of my things about the Bucks when we were looking at it after those two games was like, it's a little bit closer than people want to give it credit for. And then the Bucks kind of just figured it out. It kind of reminded me a little bit, this series, of the series the Bucks lost while Seth was there. I had to tweak that there to Toronto, but you know, kind of getting a little bit sort of figuring it out and the formula and you know, there were close games in there and things like that, but they kind of just figured the Suns out and figured themselves out, like what they needed to do, and that's kind of what took them on the next four games.
Well, in a couple of the games, the thing they needed to figure out was how to make every shot. But you know, if you have guys like Chris Middleton on your team, you're going to have games where, you know.
Yeah, but that was also but really it was their defense. Like when we're mm-hmm. talking about like figuring them out, I mean, you've done great stuff on how much they've limited the corner threes, and which in turn limited the opportunities for Devin Booker to get assists and things like that. Because that was kind of, I bet if you looked at it, that was probably where he got most of his assists from, you know. It's along those lines of like, that's what I mean. Yeah, of course, you know, Middleton catching fire, that's just luck sometimes. So, you know, but I felt like defensively they really did kind of figure out how to go at the Suns.
I mean, a little bit of I don't know, what do we want to say? Drop coverage has shown to be effective if you can play it well. And it's a tool in the bag versus a every single possession type of defense. But the Bucks, I thought, showed, hey, this is how you actually have to play drop defense. So when you look at Utah and they have no good wing defenders, no good point of attack defenders, and you start saying, well, drop coverage doesn't work in the NBA. Well, now you have the context of how it can work, right? Like taking away that corner three, not a lot of teams have the guys that can do that.
Well,
Bucks did.
It's as much. It's sort of the drop coverage is a hammer and an anvil, and we focus more on the anvil, which is the big guy. But you know, from a defensive standpoint, who is the most important player in the series? It's hard. I mean, you could argue Giannis, I suppose, but really, mm-hmm. I think it was really Jrue Holiday, and right. like his ability to get over, around, through, under, past, whatever screens. meant that he was sort of an all-purpose, oh, that guy's hitting some shots, stop that. And whether it was Chris Paul or Devin Booker, or I think they even put him on Mikal Bridges a couple times, mm-hmm. when Bridges had made some shots. And so that, you know, not letting the guard come off a screen and just size up the big and drop coverage is a big part of why it works.
And this, but to go back to a little bit of what you said, Dave, because I kind of disagree a little bit with some of the stuff you said. Mm-hmm. But the thing about, like, you lined up why the Jazz, you know, stayed in drop coverage, but they didn't have the pieces to stay in drop coverage, right?
Exactly.
Like it's you know, everything that Seth just suggested with Drew Holiday, and you can run other coverages and stay home on shooters and things like that. It's all just built. But you're right on. You can't stay in one thing. You know, teams will figure you out. And I don't think that's what the Bucks did. You know, the Bucks were doing a bunch of different things. You know, at times it was a straight switch where Giannis would switch on to guys. With Lopez, they would be in drop, but they weren't in a deep drop. You know, they were, I think, in the first game, but they started to get back, you know, higher up in the drop. And it was almost closer to playing center field than drop. And I think that's really the stuff you see with it. But, you know, you got to just – tip your hat to them, man. They did it. They figured it out. I mean, you know, and people had them left for dead after two games.
You brought up last week how the Bucks kind of remembered how big they were. I think Drew Holiday remembering how big he is was huge, right? Like, he was leaning on Booker and Paul a lot, and being able to be physical without fouling. You know, we talked about this on the Ding the other night. He had that really great strip on Booker out top toward the end of that game, and it was just like a textbook steal, but it was so physical. It looks like a foul, but there's not really a foul there. And he did that for the, especially the last four games of the series in a way that, I mean, that was the best I had seen him play defense in the entire playoffs.
Can we go back just a second? Cause Mo made a good point. And maybe Mo, can you describe the difference between drop and center field? Because that's been sort of a misnomer about the Bucks is like, part of the reason they've been so successful on the regular season is they don't play a drop. They play because Brook Lopez has good small space mobility. Their base defense has been center field. And so the difference between that and, like, whether it's, you know, it's a Hassan Whiteside just dropping all the way back to the rim. Can you describe what you mean, what the difference you're making there is?
Yeah, and look at the way – it's actually, you could have seen it in any of the games in the finals because DeAndre Ayton was in a drop. Right? Like, a lot of times guys would come off the screen, especially a high pick and roll. Ayton was playing it where his feet were pretty much in the paint, you know, and you're just letting the guy come to you. In center field, the big man is actually up higher, but what he's doing is he's trying to play it two on one sort of thing. He's trying to make sure the roller doesn't get behind him, but trying to keep the ball in front of him in time for the guard to get back in the play. And sometimes that means you're staying with this kind of cat and mouse thing where you're making it look like you're taking the ball or making it look like you're taking the big. That might mean you have to make a play at the rim, but that's okay because that's part of the defense in terms of that with your big man. But you're trying to buy time for the guard to get back in front of his man so that you can just pull straight away. But that's sort of the difference. In drop, you're just kind of waiting for it to come to you. In center field, you're kind of just playing it up 2-on-1 and trying to keep everything in front of you until you can get back to your guy.
You're giving space and retreating, not just sitting under the rim, basically.
Yeah. The block that Giannis had on the alley-oop to Ayton is a perfect example of what Mo just described. And I mean, yeah, you're right. Like, that's exactly what they were doing. You know, you talked a lot, Mo, about how the Suns just continuously cross back after the screen, cross back. Do you feel like that? I mean, was that actually taking away the corner shot? Was that making it a little bit easier for the Bucks to stay in center field, do you think? Kind of slowed it up a little bit?
I don't think so, because they tend to, if you look back at those games, especially game six, they didn't cross back as much even. You know, mm-hmm. And I think that was something that was like, okay, there was more of a true just straight, I'm coming off the screen, pick and roll. It wasn't, they still did it, but they weren't doing it the way they were before, where it was literally every possession, you know. And I think even with the crossback, you can kind of pull in that weak side guy as like, say, Chris is coming across the paint. Somebody's going to pull in trying to stop Chris. That might open up that corner three there a little bit. So, you know, I think really just at the end of the day, the Bucks, it was clear, kind of had a rule. It was just, hey, stay home.
Yep.
If you look, you rarely saw them come in and rotate in off the weak side. If we give up a lob, we give up a lob. They literally just said, no, stay your ass there in the corner and whatever happens, happens. You know, and I think that was kind of – that was what changed everything for them. And it could have been crossback, straight pick and roll, transition, whatever. There was – they you were not allowed to leave your man in the corner.
They – I think sort of related to that is Jared Dubin at 538 wrote an article. I don't remember if it was after game four or five. But he went into the tracking data and saw that to that point in the series, Devin Booker had run 50-something ISOs. And the Bucks had double-teamed zero of them. And I think that's that of the same thing you're talking about. The Bucks did just a fantastic job of staying out of rotation. So they were, you know, maybe Devin Booker was hitting shots on them, but he wasn't breaking the defense. He was beating the defense, not breaking the defense. And it's funny because we talked a lot throughout this postseason about that was kind of what Milwaukee was doing. Like it was Chris Middleton's shot making was beating a defense but not breaking it. And I do felt like that kind of flipped over the course of this series as the Bucks kind of dialed in how they could keep themselves out of rotation against the Suns' creative players.
And it also goes to an earlier point before somebody says, yeah, you should never double Devin Booker. It helps when you have Drew Holiday guarding him. You know, it helps when you have a guy like that, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's always based – your defense and your offense always comes down to your personnel and what you can do with them. Sometimes you have limitations that will hold you back.
Well, and the Bucks didn't have – I mean, you know, Bobby Portis was the weakest defender that they were playing, right? And even he held up pretty well in the series, you know – certainly some gambles that didn't play off, but I think overall you could probably just say, hey, you know what? Bobby Portis wasn't bad. He got us some rebounds when he needed it. He was able to hold up on a switch. I keep talking about how, you know, just sometimes just being able to be a big body and stay a big body is a good thing for a guy. And he was able to do that. So, you know, the Bucks didn't give up any, like there were no bad defenders on the court for them ever. Wow. And that's huge.
We sort of memory hold that, but yeah.
Yeah.
No, this is like on the video, I was just like, I was wearing a giant L for, I was very kind of critical of Bobby Portis and yeah. Oops.
Great.
Everybody was.
Yeah. Because we only have track record to go on, right? And this fit has been fantastic. I'll admit, I saw the offensive fit. I was worried about what it was going to look like on the defensive end, but you saw like just a willing shooter, Seth, when he was out there instead of PJ, look at how much better that offense looked. And it was just because you knew you couldn't leave him open. You know, the defense had to play a step or two closer to him, just like they did with Connaughton. And it opens up so much for the rest of the team. And then, again, them choosing to be big also played, you know, he was perfect for that.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned Connaughton because that's the importance of just having athletes you can put on the floor in these playoff scenarios. We've seen it every year in the playoffs that, you know, this is something that we thought it might be a problem for Utah. And yeah, they got hurt, but like their wings being Joe Ingles and Bojan Bogdanović, and that are playing against, you know, Terrence Mann and you know, Paul George and Marcus Moore and just getting a little bit, you know, out versatile athleted and having a guy who, you know, I think there are lineups where Connaughton like played a couple minutes as like a tiny four even in this series. And just having those kind of guys, it's something we've talked about in the past again as sort of the Danny Ainge drafting philosophy. Is only taking guys who aren't going to get physicaled off the floor in a playoff scenario. And I think, you know, Pat Connaughton's usefulness in this finals really, I think, is of a piece with that.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, and just, again, it's along those lines where everything you look at with this team, they did have the ability to play different lineups and versatility and mix things up and go different routes. They were able to say, hey, we're going to play big. I mean, they went even to a super big lineup with Brooke Lopez, Giannis, and Bobby Portis.
Love it.
I don't know how viable it was.
I loved it.
How
loved good it was. It's great.
But, you know, and they had the ability, like you said, to put Connaughton at the four, right? Like, there was a little bit, you know, just that versatility with this team. And I think that's ultimately some of the stuff we hadn't seen from the Bucks in years past. I mean, Dave, you've even heard before I've been on the, before we had Seth on the pod, I used to complain about this for 3 years, like literally was just like, they only do one thing. And so, you know, it's seeing these kinds of things, like, this is the lesson I think you kind of take away from this stuff is, you know, I've taken away a long time ago. You got to be versatile. You got to be able to mix it up and play different ways because the way you're playing may not always work.
And the interesting thing about, again, the Clippers kind of in their depth were sort of one avenue of versatility. Yeah. I mean, the Bucks had seven guys by the end. And with those seven guys, they could play a lot of different ways. And sometimes even the same lineup could play in a different style. And I think having that, like you said, having that versatility to kind of meet any challenge as it comes rather than what, you know, they have been criticized in the past by us, certainly, of having sort of this is how we play and this is how we play and this is how we play. After game one, I thought that they did a really good job matching their style to the what the situation called for.
Yeah,
I agree.
Absolutely. I don't think there's any argument. This sucks. We're all in agreement.
We watched it.
We watched good basketball and we're being positive about it. Like, yeah, you know, what a concept.
It's fun.
Yeah.
I mean, look, man.
I want to come in and trash it.
so you want to take a run at Chris Paul for not winning the finals or something? Like,
no.
God, that
yeah, exactly.
Don't get me started.
Not at all.
We don't have to do this.
Like, the idea that, we don't. It's pretty absurd. You know what? Actually, what I want to do now, because we haven't even really talked about him yet. King of the world, man.
How about that game six? I want to just talk specifically about that. Yeah. The guy, look, and also, I just got to say, going to Chick-fil-A and ordering the 50
piece.
That was awesome.
That was the best part. That was my favorite of the game.
This guy rules.
The 50 piece at Chick-fil-A.
Can you mind if I put you on camera? There's 150,000 people watching.
Did she not know who he was?
It's amazing. It's amazing.
She was aware.
Yeah.
You don't live in this town and not. So.
First of all, he's the greatest. He's the best. Okay. Person. I root for this guy. I root openly for this guy. Like, it's very easy. I think everybody does. He's super lovable. I like that we're celebrating him publicly right now. This is great. But that game, I've never seen anything like it. 50 points. He had 5 blocks. That's the first time it's ever happened in a finals game. Thanks to Keith Parrish, friend of the program, for that stat. 17 of 19 from the free throw line.
And it wasn't just, he wasn't white knuckling them in.
Nah.
They were like,
no, they were clean. They were clean.
No,
they
that was good. Like, that was like, if he comes back next year and his jump shot form looks like the free throw form he was using in game six, it's a problem.
He's just relax.
It's a problem.
Will the defenses let him get a warm up before he gets?
Well, no, but
I'm just busting the joking. Yeah. Relax.
I mentioned this to some buddies of mine because I noticed a lot of his free throws in that game were front rim, right? And it reminded me of Tim Duncan. Like, it's kind of just like, make sure it's up there, nice and easy, right? So just groove that motion a little bit, get it up on the rim. But you were right. Like, he just looked comfortable on those free throws. And he was in, I described it as a zone. He was in the zone. He was just so locked in. And there were times where the Bucks just could not get a shot to go down. And you could just see him force the issue and play with the sort of force that we had talked about during the entire playoff run and really during the entire season. Go to the basket. Don't settle for those ISO threes. And yeah, he had that really nice one where, you know, a little behind the back dribble into the left hand. So like nice and in rhythm. That was great. But he was absolutely dominant in the paint in that game in a way that I mean, Shaquille O'Neal is the only guy that comes to mind.
Yeah. The only other player besides Shaq in the last 20 years to average 10 rim attempts per game in the finals was LeBron, who did it like a bunch of times, but not quite as effectively. Like, you know, one of those series was, I believe, the 3 yards in a cloud of dust, you know, when series that they end up losing in 6 games, when Delly was like their second best player because Kyrie and Kevin Love were hurt. I want, like, there's a name that has to get some credit, I think, for how Giannis played, and it's a guy named Dr. Craig Manning. Look up a TED talk from him on YouTube, and then, you know, watch some of Giannis's press conferences again, and you're kind of see where some of that flow state was coming from. As my son enters a flow state, running right by us again. Thank you, Bruce. He's completely in the zone. He's oblivious to anything else around.
Knew what you were doing. Yeah. Knew what you were doing. Yeah. Said, "Hey, right. Dad needs me to show them the flow state." That's all he was trying to do.
So,
just his performance was something, though, in the sense of it was really most impressive in the third quarter when it looked like this thing was kind of a little bit in danger of kind of slipping away a bit. And you just felt like he was like, okay, look, Chris don't got it right now. Drew don't got it right now. I'm making sure I take care of everything. And he was phenomenal. And it's everything in the paint. And it was really – I mean, I still got really pissed off when he pulled up on Frank Kaminsky from 3.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. Curse words were uttered. But, like, along those lines, like, when he flexed his dominance – It showed in a way we haven't seen in quite a while.
And he still trusted his teammates down the stretch. I mean, Chris Middleton, you know, he hits that crazy floating to his right mid-range shot that kind of iced the game. But Giannis still played their game. It was just that when they didn't have it going, Giannis just made it go. And I mean, 50 in a clincher. And you needed every point. 50 of 105 of your team's points generated the way that he did. The only other game in a finals clincher that even comes to mind for me, and I'm not a basketball historian, but that Draymond game seven, and it was this, I mean, this blows that out of the water, obviously.
If you're talking about the need every play, I mean, you got to, you know, go back to the 98 game six in Salt Lake.
Yeah.
Like, you know, bucket steals.
Yeah.
Push off.
Everything. Yeah. You're doing that with a teammate barely can walk with his back. You know, it was an all time performance.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, everything's been said about it.
And the great part about it was that, like, about midway through the third quarter, you kind of knew, oh, this is something special that we are, you know, sometimes it kind of sneaks up on you and, like, bites you at the end. But, I mean, we saw, like, two of the, like, the all-time single game best playoff performances this year. And one was that, and the other one was Kevin Durant in game five of the second round series. And yeah, it's, you know, those are two of the best, maybe three players in the world at their absolute peak. And can't really ask for much more than that.
It's amazing.
All right. As we're kind of winding this down, I have a question for you guys, and it's going to seem weird because, you know, we just watched the Bucks win a title. You guys think the Bucks have more room to grow? Like, do you think they can be better than this next season? Because I do. I think that they left a lot on the table. But I want to ask you guys because you're my experts.
I don't think so. I shouldn't say I don't think so. It's really dependent on what the roster looks like when they come back. Right? Okay. Like, you have your three guys for sure, you know. Lopez is under contract for next year. And correct me if I'm wrong on any of these. I think after that, you got to start figuring everything out.
Connaughton is under contract. Portis has a player option, which he will be declining. I feel pretty confident in saying. PJ Tucker is expiring, but they have full bird rights on him.
Right.
Yeah. So, but, I mean, you got to start figuring out what you're going to pay, where you're going to – all those things. It's hard to build to around the margins there. And, you know, look, the East is also going to be really good next year, but I don't know how much, you know, more we can see from that. I think Chris Middleton is who Chris Middleton is. Like, we saw him another level this year in terms of playmaking and things like that. I don't know if he'll get much better than that. He can probably get better offensive games from Drew Holiday and a little more consistency offensively from him. But defensively, this is who he is, and it's freaking great. It's not. It's great.
I don't think their defense can get any better, right? I think there's room for improvement on the offensive end. I think a system that helps them generate buckets where it's not the uphill struggle that we see sometimes, you know, and reliance on some really difficult shot making from Middleton and, you know, the stuff that they do. I just think that kind of stuff they can improve on, but they did just win a title. So who knows? Maybe this is as good as it gets for them.
Well, I mean, you think back though, like they did not have a lot of depth even before Dante DiVincenzo got hurt. They didn't have a lot of depth because they traded all their depth and all their flexibility to get Drew Holiday. So next year, you know, DiVincenzo will be coming back, and at some point next season, you have all the normal sort of team building, you know, all your exceptions and stuff like that that you can use again to bring those people around. You have the lure of, hey, we just won a title, so veteran shooter X, come on down. And, you know, you talk like, would a more playable shooter than Bryn Forbes have helped this team? Yes. And so you have the basis of your team, and now you can realize, okay, what were we short? We could use one more ball handler, one more shooter, and we might need to find someone in that Bobby Portis slot. And here are our avenues to do that. I think there are some personnel fixes that, you know, can, because they're going to need to be better next year because the East is going to be better.
Yeah.
Yeah. But your point, Dave, too, about like, system, you know, finding a system and things like that, that's going to come down to the guys. you know, right. And the player is really kind of saying, buying into that stuff. And I don't know, I don't see that happening. You know, I don't think they're going to have a lot of guys they can run a great motion offense off of. You know, it's, I don't know if there's, it would be a hard offense to build with this crew, to be honest. Like, you know, system wise, you know, you tell me, what do you think? And like, well, what would you like?
The number one thing, and this is obviously, I don't think they have the tools to build it, but you know, the one improvement obviously would be a better drink stirrer in the pick and roll, right? To run pick and roll with Giannis with, but they don't have the tool necessarily to do that. But I do think that there's stuff that they can do. Running more of that Chris Middleton Giannis pick and roll will help them out quite a bit, but it's got to be more than just pick and roll stuff. They need stuff that they can go to that isn't just the Chris Middleton ISO. I worry about that. You know, the sustainability of it. It works great because Chris can hit shots, but you know, wouldn't it be nicer if it was easier?
He was usually out of timeouts, but they did, like throughout the series, they got to some nice stuff where they kind of did action, quick swing, mm-hmm. second side action, reverse the ball a couple times and get everyone kind of moving. They did have that in the bag. It just, that was mostly sprinkled in like ATO. And if that becomes sort of more of a, not the base, because like the base of the offense is Giannis go to the basket.
Right. Giannis go get points.
but yeah, like finding some stretches of games where you can, okay, Giannis be a decoy and then we're going to do some side to side stuff. I think that like you could get through some stretches of games a little easier with a lighter workload on Giannis and Middleton.
And that's the thing, right? It's the workload. Offensive efficiency, you can only improve so much. Like, I think that there is a point where you just can't get any better. And they're already a really good offense. It's more about just lightening that load on those guys so that the buckets come easier. I mean, and obviously load managing players has not been a real issue for the Bucks. Like, if anything, we probably are begging them to play players more than they do. So maybe that's not.
I mean, that was kind of we've talked about their like lack of depth in the playoffs, but in a way that was almost a benefit. Yeah. Is, you know, we've wanted to see Giannis play 42 minutes a game in the playoffs. There's nobody else to play, then he plays 42 minutes, and so you know that's. And I think we saw that's probably at the very ragged edge of what he can play effectively, and maybe even. From a sustainability standpoint, a little beyond. Middleton can play all day. He's a great tired player, but
I don't think they can. I don't think there's much they're going to get to in that. I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of revolution or evolution in their offense to that. So I think that's just kind of. I think this is who they are. And by the way, pretty damn good.
Pretty good. Any closing thoughts from you guys on the season as a whole? I mean, like, feels like one long 18-month long season, but anything, guys?
I think, you know, just the lesson I kind of just came away with from the playoffs was just like anything can happen. Literally, we had what, 3-2-0 comebacks, you know? Mm-hmm. Four.
Yeah.
Clippers had two and the Bucks had two. Right. So it's like, you know, it's really like we kind of get ready to jump on these things and say things are over before they're over. I think it's just along the lines of like, just let it play out along more of those things for us in terms of watching, not so much the teams. The teams can do whatever the hell they want.
I mean, none of those teams coming back from 2-0 really seemed all that pressed in that third game. So, you know, like maybe we should take their advice. Well,
the first one was crazy with the Clippers just because they lost both at home. It was, right. I mean, you heard me, Dave. I killed them.
aside from that, like the game three of the Brooklyn-Milwaukee series was one of the great rock fights of all time. So I think that there was some tension there. I think one thing to take away is that it's not exactly parity, but balance at the top is a lot of fun. We went into the playoffs having really no idea among seven or eight teams who were going to make the finals. And that's fun. That's much better than, okay, well, Golden State and or LeBron are going to make the finals. And then what's going to happen? Like it's, you know, that transition to a little bit more broader group of teams, realistically thinking they have a chance is, I think, more fun. We don't want to go all the way towards like the NCAA where it's like anybody can win, right, but yeah. But a little bit less kind of overdetermined what the finals matchup is going to be is a lot of fun.
No, I agree with all that. I have one more thought. Okay.
Pre-order the Mid-Range Theory. Thank you.
Yes, please pre-order that book. My big takeaway is that the league has so much talent. It's just packed with talent. And I think we can expand. Like, the league can expand. They can add two more teams. They have the talent to do it. But it was cool to see, like you said, Seth, it was cool to see new faces under pressure. It was great. It was fun. And so anyone saying, oh, well, there's no stars. Dude, there's a lot of new stars in the league now. I mean, Trae Young was on his path there anyway. There's no way after his playoff run that guy is not a star. I mean, he leaned into it. It was awesome. One of my favorite things about the playoffs, because I know that like he comes across as an unlikable player, but I don't know anybody who isn't down with Trae Young now, including a certain hater on this podcast who loves that he just leaned into being a heel.
No, it's like the NBA kind of needed someone that you love to hate. And, you know, and this is, you know, as in the two of three of us being fans of the pro Graps, you know, you need heels. Heels draw money and your people are going to tune in to like people who like Trae will tune in to watch him win. People who don't like Trae will tune in to watch the other team try to beat his ass. And that's heel psychology 101. And it's fabulous to have that back in the NBA.
Yeah. So it's a really good time to watch the NBA. I think the young guys are a lot of fun, and it was really cool to see the new faces getting a chance to actually win a title. So it was a good, fun, long year, but we made it. Congratulations to the Bucks. It was awesome. And we'll be back next week with something on the NBA draft, I hope.
The Olympics, folks. Olympic basketball. Oh, yeah. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun.
Mexico today in soccer was just incredible. They were just fantastic today. It was a lot of fun. I don't know if anybody's watching. After the Euros, man, I'm all in on Olympic soccer. That's where I'm at. For Seth and Mo, I'm Dave, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Nerdist She Wrote.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.